Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast with me, your host, Steve Fury. Guys, we got another banger. This is part three, Trips. We dropping Trips. Steph Curry from the three, all about Charles Void Harrelson. If you don't know him, this is the third one we've done. Why don't you go back on the next two? Our guest is, you guessed it, Lisa Traeger still. We banged this one out fine. This is our first three-parter. Is it because it's that good? Yes. Is it because our guest is that good? Yes. Is it because we did like 2.5 hours? Also, yes. That's also a large part of it. I don't know if you guys really want to listen to like a 5-hour podcast, but whatever. If you don't know what's going on, want a little boost in your memory. It seems like every day a new skeleton falls out of the closets of Hollywood, but rarely does news break of something as high profile as that of Charles Void Harrelson, father of Woody and Brett Harrelson. Charles Harrelson was a hitman, a card shark, a womanizer, and maybe, just maybe, associated with the murder of JFK. He was convicted of 2 murders. Texas Rangers believe he killed dozens more, and one of those happened to be federal Judge Joe Wood. The investigation that followed ranked second all-time in total expenditure. That's cash money, baby, dropping bills, only behind the JFK assassination itself. But in retrospect, the case had more holes than Swiss cheese. This is a story of a Texas outlaw, of the rise of gambling, of the mob, hypnosis, the Cubans, and one of the biggest stories never told. This is the story of Charles Void Harrelson. I mean, yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I've loved this episode so much. And no one really ever heard about this guy. A couple podcasts did it, but hey, we did it a little bit better. What have I been up to since I was last with you guys? Did another little Kreischer run. Did a little bit of the old Pennsylvania. Ever heard of it? Pennsylvania is a very interesting place. Because you got Philly. I pretty much just call all of Pennsylvania Philly, but that's not true, and everyone there is going to hate me. You got Philly where, very aggressive. Everyone's just kind of... Okay, let's go with the cheesesteaks first, okay? Overrated. Cheesesteaks overrated. It is. It's just not... It's just Cheese Whiz and thinly sliced, like, roast beef. It's just not that good. Okay, I've had all of them. I had Geno's. I had Ishka Bibbles. I had every single one you can have on the 2 times I've been there with Bert. Because guess what, guys? People love to give Bert free shit. And guess what? I love to eat and use the free things that they give him. I actually like Philadelphia, to be honest with you. I think it's if you put Philly in the Midwest or in the South, it'd get a lot more respect, you know, because it's in the shadow of New York City. It's like a really beautiful sister. It's like 2 sisters. One's extremely beautiful. One's pretty hot. But the one who's pretty hot next to the extremely beautiful one just doesn't look that great. But if she was like on her own, people would be like, yo, you know, friggin' Cynthia? She looks bad AF. And I think that about Philadelphia. One of my favorite weirdest things about Philadelphia are the roaming gangs of dirt bikes. Like dirt bike gangs that go around. I don't know if they're gangs. They kind of look like gangs. And if you don't know what happens, imagine... like 12 people on dirt bikes, each on their own dirt bike, multinational. The ethnicity is definitely not one. It's very normally mixed from the like 15 gangs I saw or groups of dudes who ride dirt bikes. And then they just do tricks everywhere. And I mean real fucking tricks. Like they're doing standing on the bike. They're doing riding backwards. It's kind of cool, but it's very loud, man. You'll just be chilling and it's just like... Is it worth it? Is it cool? I don't understand. Are cops not getting them in trouble? I don't see turning signals or license plates. Is it just like cops are like, listen, you guys can ride dirt bikes. We have given up policing after the Black Lives Matter protests. And we don't want to help anybody anymore. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows what they're doing? But it's very interesting and kind of fun. Also went to a place called Suplex Consignment Store. This was very interesting, man. A new friend of mine named Mike from Suplex, this guy on South Philly, on South Street, he owns like 4 stores. He owns a trading card business. He owns a vintage clothes business. And he owns a shoe store. And when we went in the shoe store, it's pretty great. Now, when you go in these shoe stores where they're, I think the word's consignment, where there's small batch of like very limited expensive shoes, there's never that many sizes because normally people are trading them in. But we go in there with Bert and... they shut the store down for us. and Bert is just in there, and they're out showing him all these shoes. And then, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, if everyone's going on a shopping spree, I'll go on a shopping spree. So then I look at some shoes and I find one that I like. You know, I go, okay, I'll get this one. It's these Undefeated Dunks. Undefeated is a kind of like Suplex, but in LA on La Brea, and they have a lot of cool stuff. They're probably a little hipper 5 years ago, but the shoe itself, really good, really subtle. I like how the subtleness of the shoe. It's all black, perforated, suede, but it has little accents in it that kind of like my style that I like to do. You know, it looks very plain, but if you look deeply, there's a lot of detail there. So we're in there, and I'm looking at some shoes. Bert's picking like six of, like, you know, some of the most expensive shoes you can have. Each one's like $1,000, you know, $700, just some sneakers. And then I go, okay, you know, I'll get in here, but I ain't dropping a fucking $1,000 on some sneakers. You know, I'll drop a like $350 to $400, and then in hopes of those things one day becoming worth $1,000. So I see this one, I go, you know, I'm gonna go with the $150. It was around $150, $200. I get it. We hang out with these guys for quite a long time. The owner, Mike, the guy with the four different spots, he has a fennec fox. That's a very small fox with very large ears. He's just like walking around with it, and it was extremely cute. And now I got an exotic animals guy. So if I ever want gator, I don't know what would I might want that fennec fox. That thing was insanely cute. Like, honest to God, it has the baby features of, like, giant eyes, giant ears, tiny little head, and it's like, what's better than that, you know? Everyone wants some Bratz doll-looking fox. So we hang out with him, and then we're getting ready to all close out. Bert's got about seven pairs of shoes, and the guy just wipes her bill clean. He goes, don't worry about it, just keep it and give me a little promo. And I was like, oh, that's cool, you know, Bert, very wealthy man, gets free stuff. And I go, okay, I'm ready to pay. And he goes, nah, you're in there. And I'm like, what? I'm really like, damn, I should have got a better pair of shoes. I'm like, hey, can I put these back and get the old Grateful Dead Dunks? Can I do that, buddy? That was pretty cool, man. Before that, we were in rural Pennsylvania. I got to tell you, folks, the rural Northeast does not get enough credit for being weird. You know, you think of the Northeast, you think of your Phillies, your New Yorks, maybe your Pittsburghs, but there are tiny, weird little towns all throughout it that are nothing that you would have expected. Not hillbilly, but, you know, a little wonky. Little wonky. And the weirdest thing, man, is you've never been in the Northeast. Like, listen, I never really traveled that much in my life before hooking up with Bert or before getting into stand-up, right? And when you go into the rural Northeast, their shit's so much older than the West Coast, you know? Like, you'll just be seeing a giant steel plant that's just, like, vacated, abandoned. And there's a whole little town all around it, and it just looks downtrodden. We played this casino in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I'm talking about getting to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania from Philly. You had to take, like, side streets in little towns. Like, we weren't even on a highway the whole time. And literally, I was talking to Pete, the part of the assistant. I'm like, dude, are you trying to fucking kill me right now? Where the fuck are we going? It's very weird, man, but it's kind of cool. It's definitely not like Central California where, you know, like, it's a little country there. This kind of gets a little, you know, Central California seems a little methy. These areas seem a little oxycodony, if you know what I'm saying. But the show was fun. We did it at this place called Bethlehem. I think some casino. I'm not sure. It was a stage right next to the casino. Venue itself, not the best. Weird setup. It's kind of like a pit in the middle with a little riser above, about 6 feet tall, and people set up there too, and like a U around it. You know, it's just, as I've been able to tour these theaters, you really get to understand the difference between some of them, you know. The one we just did was kind of more of a, almost could be an auction house, if you know what I mean. Like, it just didn't have personality. But it was still fun. People were still great. Enjoyed hanging out and meeting. Actually, didn't get to hang out with them, but enjoyed DMing people and them saying they had enjoyed the show. It was two shows. First one, didn't do that good. Not going to lie. I was a little off. Once we flew in, so traveling with Bert also has a more, everything's just perks. Everything in my life is traveling with that guy is a perk. So when you leave it at LA, it's the only one in LA right now. It's the only one in the world right now that they're doing this. There's things called private suites, okay? So whereas normally you would go into an airport and chill there and maybe go to the, you know, United Lounge or the first class lounge before you get in. There are these almost fancy apartments on the tarmac that you can go into. And no one else can get into them, and you're in there. And once you get in there, it's like a high-end apartment, studio apartment kind of. There's bathrooms, really, really, really nice bathroom, and a nice room. And it is filled to the brim with snacks and alcohol and little knickknacks, okay? And you should take everything. Because it's all free. It's not free. Bert had to pay a shit ton of money to get us in there. But it's covered in his bill. And I'm talking like they got the new iPhone fast chargers. They got like the bathroom is jacked with like vitamins and sleeping pills and anti-queasy stuff and toothpaste and stuff. So it's really cool. You can like almost being on the road so much, you can like resupply your supplies. And then they also have a shit ton of alcohol, and they also have like a waiter that comes in, and he'll bring you caviar, and he just keeps bringing you caviar, and then you're smashing drinks, and they're all airplane sized drinks, you know, those little shots. So you can also take them in your backpack and go on the plane. So that part's cool, but then it gets even cooler because then you go through security, and it's just two TSA agents in a small hallway, and they're downloading or like they're little old school metal detector stuff. Like it's old school, like easy to get through, super easy. So then you get through that, and then this is the best part, hands down, of all of it. Then when you get through that, you go into an Escalade, a brand new Escalade, and it drives you on the tarmac to your plane. And then you walk up the sides to the plane. You don't have to step inside the airport. And then, you know, some people are like, well, I want to get on the first. Why would you want to get on the plane first, okay? If you have first class seats, go on last. Just slip on in. And that's the thing that Bert really hooked us up with is this week was was able to get some first class seats for the first time. And these aren't the first class seats, like just normal bigger seats. These were sleeper pods on Delta. So you get in this almost like a work cubby, you know, walls about 4.5 feet tall, and you sit on this lounge chair pretty good, and your feet go into like a little, almost like a car, like a little whatever down there. At the end, there's a little pillow for your feet. You sit in there, there's a bunch of chargers for you, and then they got this button on the side that lets you recline, and you can go flat, completely horizontal, and go to sleep. And then that was the first time I ever got first class in my life, and I gotta say, fuck, that's so much better, dude. Because I've been doing these, you know, I'm sadly as a human being, or maybe just me, even when you start reaching some of your goals and things in life, you still find a way to pick them apart, right? So as I'm doing traveling the country with Bert, I am having to fly coach. Normally we fly coach. Bert just wanted to hook us up, I think, for New Year's, and he, with Omicron, he didn't want to have staff to be back there and then probably give him Omicron. So, I normally do coach, and fuck, man, in the last 2 months, I have gone to Ohio, New York, Philly, Miami, and Houston, and each of those is about 5 to 6 hours to and from. So, you know, in the coach, it starts weighing on you, man. I mean, it's just hard to do. I'm not a huge guy, right? I'm about 6'1", 220. It's just a nightmare during coach. And then coach right now during COVID, they're not giving you any drinks. They're just treating you. It's awful. So got to fly in with that. That was awesome. And then then we flew in, then we went straight to Bethlehem. That was the show we did. I was a little off on the first one, because I normally, if I do travel somewhere, it normally gets me like, I don't really do a show the next day. I'm not so jet lagged. I'm just kind of tired. But we got in there, did the show. And the next day we go into Philly, drive from Bethlehem to Philly. In Bethlehem, the fucking room service lady just kept knocking and kept telling me to get up. And it's like 11. She's like, you have 10:30 checkout. I'm like, number one, no, I don't. I can stay as long as I want. Maybe you should check the itinerary. Because I went to bed at 4 and you're waking me up at 10, 6 hours. Okay, that's good for a normal person, but I'm not a normal person. I am an artiste that needs to stay up till the middle of the night because it's fucking New Year's Eve, lady. That was a nightmare. So then we start taking the old car down to Philly. We get into Philly, jack traffic. Oh my gosh. I mean, jack traffic. It was gnarly. We get into Philly, and Bert, unbeknownst to me, got us a spot. Got us each a room at the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, yeah, you know, who? I've never stayed at a Ritz before. Things I'll say about the Ritz. Number one, the lobby, sick. Sick. It's like old granite and quartz, huge columns. You know, you own like a new hotel, fancy hotel now or something that was built recently, and you can touch the columns, and you're like, oh, this is just plaster over fucking a pole. They made it look like this. It's like, nah, this shit was real. You can feel the weight. You can feel how old this place was. It was really cool. The rooms themselves, decent. Bed was great. Bathroom was sick, though. Bathroom was really sick. Almost so sick, I almost took a bath. Like, that's got to be pretty cool. So, and then we go to the show that night. It's at the Met in Philly. You know, I've heard the name the Met, but a lot of things in Philly, I think, are called the Met. You know, I think there's MetLife Arena. MetLife Stadium, I think, is what they're where they play football and basketball. It's all in the same area. So I didn't really understand where I kind of, you know, at the Met Gala. I don't really know. We get to the place, you're driving up. You can see this giant sign that says the Met with old yellow light bulbs, like make the whole thing. And you see that kind of stuff. You're like, okay, then someone's taking a little time to make this place look nice. So it's probably going to be good. And when I got inside, fire. I mean, the green room, they had a giant ice sculpture head of Bert Kreischer with a tube coming in his mouth so he can have shots out of his face. I mean, that's incredible. And then the charcuterie boards, whatever, aged meats and cheeses. They got us 4 of them, and they're like, well, they went to like an artisan cheese place. So I'm just pounding prosciutto, spicy cheese on like a little soda water cracker, and it was just popping, man. That was so fun. We also got a new tour manager, done with Trevor. I don't know if I've ever talked about that guy on this podcast, but I personally, not a huge fan of him as a human being or as a man who has a job. He was not very good, in my opinion. I have no power in anything. I have no say in anything. But he was recently let go, and we got this. Got a girl named Amanda. Hung out with her for the first 2 times. Apparently, she's going to be living on the bus with us. That'll be interesting. Never had a girl on the bus. Well, I had my girlfriend stayed over, but, you know, not like a... So that will be interesting. She is, though, very good at her job. Everything was perfect. She used to be the tour manager for Old Crow Medicine Show, if you know who they are. An old country band. Not an old country band. If you ever heard the song Wagon Wheel, that one Darius Rucker on, they sung the original one, which, you know, honestly, I think is 100 times better. And if you like kind of folk music, Old Crow Medicine Show, top of the list for new music. So she's there. She's crushing it. And then we do both shows. First show I did okay. You know, the first show was kind of like, so it's just me and Bert. So normally if there's 2 comics before Bert, because, you know, we're only doing 15 minutes a piece, the first guy kind of gets fucked because Bert's crowd, as they should, love to partay. Love to drizink. So they're going to be in the line. And, you know, shows are always sold out, so the line for the beers are always super long. So they're going to be in line kind of halfway through the act of the first guy. But now when it's just me and Bert, I went up there. I just didn't feel the energy. I could see people laughing, but there were holes. And I was like, damn, are these people coming to a show on New Year's Eve and you're not going to show up on time? Then I remembered, you know, it's not about you, Steve. It's about COVID again. It's always about fucking COVID. So what happened was, to get into the New Year's Eve show, this one was rolled, produced by Live Nation, you had to be vaxxed and you had to show a negative test recently, within 24 hours. So that's kind of why a lot of people didn't make it, because the shows were sold out, but either they were just sick with Omicron or they weren't able to pass the test. So first one I did good, brought Bert up, he just murdered. Murdered again like he always does. Then I go upstairs. I'm enjoying some more cheeses, a little more salted meats. Then the second show happens. I go up, smash. My buddy Mike from Suplex was there. I give him a shout out. You know, if you ever give me free stuff, I will shout you out. And if you ever want to give me free stuff, send it to the Comedy Store. Just put my name on it. I think it's 8433 Sunset Boulevard. You can look it up. Send anything you want there. I'll pick it up. Might even put it behind the shelves. I got shelves now, folks. Also, we're going to be putting out a lot of these episodes on YouTube. Problem is, I can't do it right now because I'm banned from YouTube. I was uploading child pornography. No, I'm kidding. I am banned, though, because I was putting the show Punching Up on YouTube, and apparently YouTube doesn't want people to fight anymore. I'm not really sure. I was like, wasn't that guys your guys' whole thing for a while? It was kind of weird videos and stuff. Was it Two Girls, One Cup on YouTube? Whatever. So they banned me for 90 days. So we're going to be bankrolling a couple of these episodes. I also got a new producer we're going to have on this one. My buddy named Bruce Gray. He's going to start helping me out. So we're going to have the Comedy Store helping me out. Bruce Gray helping me out. And this episode, as you know, as you listened to the last three, produced by my buddy Gray Livingston. He helped do all the research. So, you know, hopefully this stuff will keep growing in the new year. I want to say thank you to all you guys for coming out to shows. I want to thank you guys for supporting me, all my new followers. I had a great year. You all helped me have a great year. You know, if you want to help me out, drop a comment on the Apple Podcast thing. If you want to share it to someone, if you think it's getting good, share it with someone. I would appreciate that. Next week, we are going to do the Kinahan Cartel. If you don't know who they are, you shouldn't. They are, though, the third biggest cocaine supplier in Europe. They are an Irish cartel. They did have a gang war for years and never got in trouble. And my guest is going to be my guy, Mark Hayes. If you don't know Mark Hayes, he's a comedian, comedy producer in L.A. The guy's kind of got all the biggest shows in L.A. And he is Irish, an actual Irish person. So that'll be fun. I'll be able to ask him a bunch of questions on how society is over there with partying, with drug dealers, with all that kind of stuff. Because I always just kind of, I just picture it like cobblestone streets, cold, wet, and moss. So I don't know how giant cartels work into that, but he's going to be able to help me, I think. I think he kind of, you know, he's a little bit of a dirty boy, if you know what I'm talking about. He's definitely a fuck boy. So I think he'll know a lot of the questions. And, you know, if you guys got any suggestions for the podcast, suggestions of who you want me to check out, if there's a guy that, you know, no one knows about but you heard about and you'd love a little episode about him, DM me on Instagram, guys. I'm always on that shit. So my suggestions, well, one would be go to Suplex in South Philly. Those guys got great stuff. Check out all of his stores. You can probably check it out on Instagram, Suplex. Just look up Suplex and shoes and stuff like that. You'll be able to find it. Other than that, I'm going to be home for the next 3 weeks. We're going to try and record some podcasts, get some stuff done. Got a new year, guys, 2022. I hope I get to see you guys more. I hope you guys enjoy the podcast. I want to thank you guys for everything you've done, for supporting me and supporting the podcast. Please share it with your friends. I'll be back on the road doing a West Coast run at the middle of the month, I think 115 for like 2 weeks. So if you're in Portland, Seattle, Fresno, San Francisco, or Bakersfield, look up BertBertBert.com for tickets. Other than that, guys, enjoy this part three, the last part of the Charles Void Harrelson podcast. Woody Harrelson's psycho fucking dad, recorded with Lisa Traeger at the Comedy Store podcast studios. All right, guys, see you around. Thank you very much. Bye. So Charles just shot up his the chick he's dating son's car high on cocaine in the middle of the desert. The police were called, and when they arrived, Charles held himself hostage. He said that if anyone came any closer to him, he was going to blow his head off. He said that he would only speak to his girlfriend, Virginia Farrow, and he'd confess to the killing of Judge Wood and John F. Kennedy. This is one of the multiple times he confesses.
Yeah, but if he has the lawyer he has, like, the confession's going to be easily thrown out.
Also, he's high on cocaine in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
Eventually, Virginia Farrow was able to talk him down. He was arrested and taken to Culverson County Jail. Joe Chagra sent an attorney to see Charles, to whom he said, go to my house and pick up an ounce of cocaine. I want you to trust me. I was involved in the assassination of JFK. A lot of JFK killing talks, but honestly, when I do cocaine, I start talking about conspiracies too. What's your favorite conspiracy and why?
What's my favorite? I think I love that people are lizards. I do love the idea of lizard people. I would say that is cool. Like, mm-hmm. I like a reptile. Humans.
The lizard one's fun because you think things are coming out of the ground. Or is it parallel universe?
I don't know.
You're just like lizards. I'm in scales.
Yeah, lizard people I really like because most of them aren't favorites. It's true. I think 9/11 was an inside job.
For sure.
I think, you know, the FBI killed all of these people and the CIA. Like, I don't know other fun ones besides lizard people.
I always loved aliens, and then the government was like, they're real, and the people still aren't fucking with it. But it's like, because I feel like if aliens are real, then it kind of ruins every religion, because everything you thought about this planet with having this savior, unless you think Jesus also went to the lizard planet and all this stuff, it just kind of negates it. I think
people that are religious should be treated the same way people with schizophrenia are. You're mentally unwell, and we should help
zealous.
You.
If they're zealous, yes. Religious. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's the same as having a severe, like, delusional vision, seeing stuff. Like,
But if you use, like, a religion to live your life and you're being fine, but if it's like that's your identity,
yeah,
then I do think it's a form of...
If you cut your children off from life because they did something that you don't like, I think that's an illness. But I don't know if it's not my favorite, but I think everyone in Congress and in our government rapes young children and does gay sex and lots of stuff. And I think whoever the overlords of whatever Illuminati is in charge has videotapes of all of them in Thailand, and that's why progress can't be made in terms of helping regular people, because all these people are beholden to the people who know they've fucked, you know, children.
Well, I think that's a lot, especially in Hollywood. You know, it's like unless you become in a place that's largely held in power over other people, you can't fuck little kids. And if the only thing I ever wanted to do in my life was to fuck little kids, I'm going to get into a place that I have power over other people and I can't do it. So I 100% think that, because a lot of times it's like, who wants to be president? Who wants to be a senator? A crazy person that's either has a crazy egotistical narcissist thing, or they're like, I need to get to a place where the dirty things that I do won't have to come out.
But I do think Obama's a good person. Am I being naive?
I mean, I think he killed the most people of any president from drone attacks and stuff like that. But, the smile is sure nice. I do like his smile a lot. I mean, I voted for him every time.
I know. I just don't see the ego psychoness that I see in other leaders in him. But it's me being naive, I'm sure.
Probably. I think a person, if you're running for president, you're a guy like him who wasn't, you know, his parents weren't rich. He wasn't a person that came in. I think once he had this idea, he had this view. And then once he gets the job, there are people that are in insane power being like, one, aliens run everything. Two, we're all pedophiles. Three, if you say this, we'll blow your fucking head off like we did John F. Kennedy and all his brothers.
That's what they if you do something they don't like.
Yeah, it's like we proved it with John F. Kennedy, the most likable president of all. Of pretty much that we've had, and then we'll do whatever we got to do otherwise.
Wow. What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
Mine was aliens. For a long time it was aliens, but then now I just think it's so undeniable, and I think that people are brushing it under the rug because it
Did you see the movie Paul?
Paul.
Seth Rogen voices this little alien.
Oh, yeah. That's a fun movie.
It's the Hot Fuzz
guys. Like a Winnebago or whatever, yeah.
If those are our aliens, I would love to hang out with a little Paul alien.
See, I think more aliens treat us like we treat sharks, or like they tag us, they let us back, and then we run around, they test what we're doing. We're so much lower than them that they treat us like we would a fucking cat that we tag and put a fucking GoPro on. We're like, look what this idiot does.
Cool.
That's what I think. I think the abduction, some of them are real.
I believe in aliens and ghosts.
For sure. Ghosts are a little interesting, because then I feel like if you believe in ghosts, you got to go to heaven. there's got to be a heaven, unless you just think these entities are floating around.
Souls, reincarnation. I mean, it could be lots of things, like the unfinished business kind of classic thing. But I think there's been too many people seeing spirits. Like, my friend was just in Salem, and she was, like, smelling perfume and then Googled it, and an old woman died, and all the reviews were like, there's perfume, you know, and all of that. And she was pissed, and I was like, but you're in Salem, bitch. What'd you think was going to happen? I don't know.
Have you ever seen a ghost or something?
No.
So.
And I don't want to invite spirits into my life, but I do hope to. I'm going to go to a medium soon, because all my grandparents were dead before I was born, and if they want to talk to me, I'd love that.
So at one place I lived.
That left you fully speechless.
No, because the medium one to me is like a good comedian. To me, I've always said this, doesn't matter sex or gender, I think 5 out of 100 comedians are actually good.
Yes, I believe that. So this is why I want to go to this one. This is long. I'm so sorry. So I was listening to a podcast.
I mean, if you just want to keep going, we're just going to ruin Tony's night, but I'll keep going all night with you.
So Busy Phillips was on Les Culturistas and was talking about how her friend Shantira was having this medium talk to her. And then Shantira called Busy and was like, your grandma infiltrated my thing.
Your grandma, you.
No, Busy Phillips. And Shantira. So Shantira was like, your grandma arrived in my reading and then called Busy a name that only her grandma called her. Like, no one else in her life has called her that. And then so she went to the medium and, like, had this thing. But that's wild to go into another person. And, like, I don't know. That made me really believe. That made me really, I want to. And it's only, like, $250. And I feel for a chance to see otherworldly stuff, it's a fair price to pay. If she's a fraud, then, you know, it's gambling.
Also, if she's a fraud, you're helping a person with a mental disability out, live their whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
So it's, like, not that bad of a thing. But, yeah, I would go. I believe throughout high school I lived in a haunted house. My stepdad and my mom finally decided to move into a place. We moved to this place in an area called Southland Park in Sacramento. And then when we got in there, the house was always freezing fucking cold, okay? And there was this one room in between my parents' room and me. This was the nicest house I ever lived in. So the room that was between us, we had just a shitty extra bed and a computer. That's where I do my homework. Number one, the computer would turn on and off all the time, okay? All the time. Not that weird, but just interesting, because it would go on and off and I would get yelled at that off this computer. And it's like, bitch, I'm not even doing my homework. I don't fucking turn that thing on. I don't give a fuck. Number two, we got a cat. The cat was extremely nice. Every place we had it, we brought it home. It ran under that the bed in that room. It never come out and hissed and bit everybody. Number three, when my stepdad, there's four of them, when my stepdad and my mom started fighting, he slept in that little room, and he turned into one of the weirdest, meanest dudes I've ever met. He wasn't nice to me. He stopped talking to me. He was like a zombie. You ever seen like a...
I'm getting chills.
Like, you know, like in It, or someone has a bad dad, they like don't look at them. They're looking at the table. And this guy was one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. And when they started fighting, he slept in that room. And then I used to be in the far room, and I used to see things walk across the hall. And that's like, do I believe it's real? I don't know. I think that room someone probably died in or something weird, because it turned my stepdad, pretty nice guy, fucking weird. Not like...
Are they still together?
No. That ruined everything, that place.
Wow.
All right, let's go back to this. We've got 4 pages left. So, Charles is in the middle of the desert, high on intravenous cocaine, yelling that he killed Kennedy. A guy named Chris Lambros is the only eyewitness. Later identified Harrelson as the man she saw, she's a woman, in the apartment complex that day, but this was the first of many questionable practices that led to his life sentence. So she was the chick in the hotel that bumped into someone weird the same day of the assassination of someone, one of the judges, and she brought it up later down the road. You see, when Chris Lambros was first questioned by the FBI as to who she saw in the apartment complex that day, they were unable to draw up a definitive profile. 16 months later, she was decided to hypnotize. No, that's not.
Hypnotize, baby.
Oof, all right.
I would like to get hypnotized, too.
Hold on, let me finish this one. Let's talk about hypnotizing. 16 months later, they decided to hypnotize her, and she identifies the man as Charles Harrelson. I think hypnotize, like, hypnotic therapy could be very good to get out some stuff that I'm not ready to bring out.
I just want to be so skinny, and I think hypnosis is my key.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, you lost a lot of weight.
And then I gained like 10 of it back, yeah, I would say 12 of it back. And I miss feeling free. The thing is, I still work out consistently all the time. I just binge eat.
What's your go-to? What are you binging?
Like cheese bread. So it could be like sandwiches, pizza, Mexican. Like I like a cheesy
carb.
A cheesy carb for sure. And I guess candy.
Yeah, you're pretty much the same place. You're actually more of my girlfriend. She fucking does that. But she's thin. She's like rail thin. It's like she does it and then gives it to me and I balloon up. It's not her fault. It's my Avaloa.
I know. Stacia's so mad at me. I know it.
I lost 30 pounds with her. But it's just like a lifestyle. It's like I don't necessarily want to live the lifestyle.
Yeah, it's just about if I didn't binge all the then I think you can eat a sandwich. But it's like when everything hurts and then you continue doing it because that's your comfort from childhood. Like that's the problem.
So you really binge or you just like you're binging? You're like, I ate a fucking pizza last night.
No, like I will not be hungry and maybe even in pain full and I will order more food. I truly like will hurt myself.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Mine's, I just don't say no. Anything, if you ever have nothing to do and you got a concert and extra ticket, hit me up. And if I don't have anything, I will.
Well, you're also a food guy, yeah.
But I mean, I'll just say it to yes to anything.
Yeah.
So like every time my girlfriend's like, popcorn, I'm like, yep, anything, yep, 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 I'll do it. Hypnotically induced testimony is not admissible in court today. And even at the time, it was highly questionable. The problem is you can get someone to say anything you want while they are under hypnosis, and at that point it becomes imprinted on their minds as truth.
Because, like, who hypnotized her? The FBI?
Yes. To do it. Yes, exactly. Hypnotically induced testimony is impossible to cross-examine this way because to the person that was hypnotized, it is the truth. So you can't do like a lie detector or anything because they believe it was real. This can lead to unreliable witnesses, and such is the case with Chris Lambos. She claimed that 10 years after the murder in 1989, she was in a documentary about the killing of Judge Joe Wood. She said that this documentary was directed by Christopher Walken, as in the Christopher Walken. This is patently false. Christopher Walken was never directed any episode of a true crime documentary, and Chris Lambos believed it to be fact. Even with Harrelson being identified by the lone witness, this was not enough hard evidence to convict him, so the FBI started illegally wiretapping Charles and the Chagras. The first tapings were in the meeting room of the jail that was holding Charles, and they mostly captured women that would come in and have sex with him. Hell yeah, Charles. And leave thinking that they were in love. One of these women was Teresa Starr, daughter of Charles' wife, Joanne Starr, hereby his stepdaughter. Jesus, he was banging his stepdaughter. Disgusting. Or kind of hot if you're into that kind of thing. Was there a relationship that everyone told you was a bad idea, or you thought that was... that either way worked out or flamed out and you just kind of went into it?
No. I mean, I knew that person was like a liar, but in terms of everyone being like, that's a bad decision, no. More about friendship. I have one friend where everyone was like, don't. And I was like, but we have fun. And then it exploded. Of course.
I think I noticed. I had one. Her name was Edie. It was the reason I moved to L.A. All worked out.
Great name.
Yeah. She was a lot better of a human being now. She needed to grow into who she was. But, you know, I wouldn't be here without her, and I wouldn't be living the life I was.
And everyone was like, don't do it.
It was the only time my parents – I have very nice parents, and they were – my stepmom, one of the nicest people I know, helps me all the time. Anything bad I do, she kind of goes, oh, well, you know, that's Steven. She goes to me after it. She goes, I hate this girl. You need to get rid of her.
How long did you date?
Oh, on and off for 3 or 4 years.
Hot?
Insane.
Psycho. Hot but a psycho, yeah, just, a little bit psycho.
Just me in the beginning. Okay, let's keep going. December 10th, 1980. Harrelson and Teresa Starr found two tape recording devices in their visiting center of the jail. And Charles's attorney realized that all of their conversations had been taped. This is a clear breach of the attorney-client confidentiality, but it had been 18 months since the judge was assassinated and the FBI was desperate. At the same time, the FBI was set to wiretap Jimmy Chagra as well. They employed Jerry Ray James, a one-time member of the FBI's top 10 most wanted, to befriend Jimmy, and eventually Jimmy confessed to hiring someone to kill the judge.
Damn.
It's like, man, once you start fucking with the FBI, dude.
But is the FBI just mad at him because he kept screaming and being so vocal about shit and being like, how do you work for them and then they're also wiretapping you?
Well, they're trying to get, well, yeah, they're trying to get both of them right now. They're trying to get Jimmy Chagra more.
Got
and then
it.
they use Jerry Ray James to kind of get him, you know?
Would you ever wear a wire?
Yeah, I don't mind riding on criminals. I've always, when I used to sell drugs, I always pictured it as in the game. If you're playing the game, like I was never shooting people, but if you're playing the game, then maybe you get robbed or maybe these things happen to you, but it's in the game. And when you start hurting people outside of the game, like pedestrians and people like that, that's when things turn against you. And honestly, all these things I've seen and all these things I've done with gangs and criminals, when they start hurting normal people, that's when shit starts turning against them.
Got it. This is, I like that.
Yeah, it's
once you're in the game, you can do whatever. It's like war laws or whatever.
Yeah, it's like fair. Like if you're in a gang and you get shot, it's like that's very sad and very terrible and probably the circumstances you grew up in led you there. But also, you're playing a game. You didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
The FBI started taping the Chagras, and during one of their taped conversations, Jimmy's wife, Liz, revealed that she gave the money to a young girl that was suspected to be Teresa Starr. Teresa pleaded the fifth initially but was held in contempt. But after 6 months in jail, she testified that Charles and Joanne put her on a plane to Vegas and told her which hotel room she should go to. Shortly after she arrived at her hotel room, a pregnant woman came by and dropped off a package. The woman was Liz Chagra, Jimmy's wife, and the package was $150,000 cash. So they were trying to keep this woman quiet.
For $150,000, why
yeah,
not?
Yeah, back in the fucking like 70s. What year is this too? 1980? That was a lot of money. In another tape,
if you take a bribe like that and then it comes out, can you be charged with a crime?
I would guess for sure. Yeah, yeah.
I wonder what it's called, aiding and abetting.
Okay. Probably, I would guess aiding and abetting. But you know, if you drive someone or you're in the car and someone commits a crime, if you drive them and your buddy goes, "Hey, I'm gonna go grab a Snickers real quick in the liquor store," goes in there, shoots somebody, comes back, you get the same thing he got.
Same.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. I thought the person who pulled the trigger would get like a life sentence and then someone would, or like,
I mean, they might get a little more than you, but you're in the same shit.
Wow.
That's why people get so fucked, because a lot of times they're like, dude, I had no fucking idea that he was going to go in there and rob a place. But then sometimes they do. In another taped conversation, Jimmy and Joe Chagra talked about how they shouldn't have done it and about the gun that Charles used for the murder and later disassembled. The FBI searched Jimmy Chagra's house for clues and for the gun, but all they found was drugs, a shit ton, and a hand-drawn map to the supposed location of the gun. They were unable to find the weapons where it was indicated on the map, but after posting about it in the local paper, two brothers came forward with a gun stock that they found while diving. The FBI was able to track, draw a line back to the store where the gun was purchased, and they knew it was a fraud when the store showed them a bill of sale to one Faye L. King. Faking.
Wow, but I didn't know they were such wordsmiths.
Yeah, I mean, that one seems like maybe they looked it up before. Well, it's just how easy it is to get a gun back then and in Texas. Joanne Harrelson's fingerprints were all over the bill of sale, and her handwriting matched it. Damn, they seem to have dead to rights for killing this judge. If you were about to go to jail for 20-plus years, are you doing the time, killing yourself, or running from the law?
Running.
Oh, I like that one.
Running with a gun, and then I would kill myself if I had to be taken in.
I would agree, yeah.
But I would try to run. Try to get a boat. I just feel like I would try to run.
I would try to run as well. I would go to Mexico, do something else, and I would keep a gun. I would do exactly what we're going to do. And when it really came to it, blow my fucking head off.
Yeah, I wonder if I could kill myself, but I don't want to go to. I don't want to spend 20 years in prison. But maybe I'd probably get the shit beat out of me in prison. I don't know. I don't want to die. I don't know.
Well, this is my thing I always ask. Well, not always ask, but I always even ask normal people. What's the years in prison that you would kill yourself? Because, you know, let's say you do 10. Let's just say you're 32 years old, and then you get out of 42. It's not that
That's great. Not bad.
That's not that bad. 15, a little long. What's the amount of time you would that you'd want to kill yourself?
I think 20 to 25 to life.
Yeah, 25. 20, I would kill myself for sure.
Yeah, I'm just, because it also depends what you have on the outside. Like, are people going to be putting money into your commissary? Like, do you have friends? Like, I don't know. I've only been to jail for 2 days. And I don't know, because I am like a space cadet. I do like to lay around in my bed. Like, I do like lounging.
Yes.
But
I think solitary confinement, I do pretty well. I've been an only child my whole life. I could do that. But it's just the...
No, it fucks you.
Well, I would lose my mind. But,
yeah, yours.
But I'd rather be in solitary than around everybody else, I think.
But I feel, or I'm sure girl prisons are a little different too. You don't think so?
Yeah, they can be even more wild. Because you got one bitch who's more manly than everybody else and you just can beat the shit out of everybody.
Yeah, when I watch the YouTube videos about girls in jail, it's always like you can't, like if someone budges you in line, you can't let that shit slide or they'll keep budging. So it's like you have to fight to
and
show
you have to
that
get stabbed and all this kind of stuff.
It's tough. Death. And it's also like, are my parents alive or not? I just like there's a lot of things I would do once they're dead, I think.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there.
Like, I just don't want them to have to feel that sadness. And I don't know what would be worse for, like, me blowing my brains out in front of a bunch of cops because me on the run didn't work, or just, like, being in jail. There's actually, I think it was on a Hulu documentary about, like, parents loving their children no matter what. And there was one where their teenage son killed someone and got life in prison. And it was just the relationship they have with their son.
Yeah, that would be a hard one, man, to love someone truly. And well, because you'd probably feel like it was my fault. And it should probably somewhat was, unless it was some circumstances that you weren't there for. But it's just like, oh, if you're
no, the dad kept being like, this is a mistake. There's no way. And then he said the moment he saw his son, he knew.
Well, did you see that one documentary on Netflix that was the in Denver where the guy ended up killing his two daughters and the wife and they put him in a silo?
Oh. No.
It was one of the most fucking gnarly documentaries I ever saw. It was just a total normal family in Denver. The wife was kind of a Karen on Facebook and he was dating like a six, but like a hiking six. And then to get rid of her, he killed his daughter and the two girls and put him in a silo alive. In the middle of a desert. And then they found it finally that these fucking gnarly. And then he talked to his dad and they started breaking up when he talked to his dad.
Would you protect your kid?
I have another question like that coming up here later about your dad. It's about with the ending one of Woody and his dad is pretty interesting. March 12th, 1981.
Did you ever serve jail time and did you ever hold a gun?
I've held a lot of guns, both bad and fine, never did jail time. Okay. March 12th, 1981. I had a gun to my face.
And this is also spanning decades.
Yeah, this guy was...
This is spanning decades. Mm-hmm.
Joe Chagra was given a polygraph test by a reputable polygraphist named Theodore Ponticelli. The test results show that Chagra had no advanced knowledge of the Wood murder, and he did not arrange the shootings, and he did not plan with anyone to kill Wood, and that he did not shoot the judge.
But, you know, lie detectors are bullshit, just like the psychotherapy or whatnot.
It's nonsense. It's just to help your argument if it goes with you, and if it doesn't, it doesn't mean anything. April 15th, 1982, 23 full months after the merger of Judge Woods, Charles Harrelson, Joanne Harrelson, Joe Chagra, Jimmy Chagra, and Liz Chagra are indicted for conspiracy to murder the judge. Over the course of the 12-week trial that followed, the jurors were convinced that Charles Harrelson had been paid $250,000. That's enough to murder a judge. That's enough. He was sentenced to two life sentences, and Jimmy Chagra was sentenced to 30 years after a separate trial. At one point, Charles tried to escape prison in Atlanta, and he failed and was transferred to the ADX Florence Supermax, the same one that holds the Unabomber and the Boston Marathon Bomber. Unabomber and Boston Marathon Bomber, some good company.
I thought Unabomber was killed already.
That might have been Ted Kaczynski. There's two of them. There's two of them that I always forget. It was like the Unabomber and the other guy.
Maybe you're not Unabomber. Oklahoma Bomber.
Oklahoma
I think
Bomber, yeah.
Was.
So who's your favorite serial killers and why?
I would say Eileen Wuornos. Mm-hmm. I'm on her side. I think the way her trial went, her arrest, her childhood, everything that happened to her is fucked. She did not kill any good people. And I think it's fucked up what happened to her. And I'm all for her. So I would say Eileen.
But would you say she should be walking safe, free?
She should not have gotten the death penalty. It's pretty fucked up. There's just like, they did a study on the way men and women are treated at murder trials. And like with men, there's so many men in jail that there's more reason to cut a deal. But with women, there's plenty of space, so there's less cutting of deals. And like just the way her compared to Ted Bundy were treated, like they refused to let her move the trial to a different state. The judge refused to let her childhood and how she was treated and by all these Johns like be put into the trial. They decided to put her to death in like an hour and a half. There was not even an option for life in prison. I just feel like the way she was treated was not okay. And I think it's because, and this is like kind of my new focus in life where she's a man hater, that lesbian man hater killing men, but we never call men who kill women, women haters. Mm-hmm. And it's like that kind of played along with it, but it's like men who kill women hate women. And mm-hmm. I don't know why we can't just be like, that's a woman hater.
Well, I feel like maybe the norm is for men to kind of lightweight hate women. Yeah. And then that they were like, yo, she's the goat of female serial killers.
And there was a politician who like went and prayed with Ted Bundy and tried to get him not killed. And he was the one fighting for Eileen to be executed. I just think
the Florida thing, right?
I think so. Yeah. But like she legit at 9 years old was prostituting herself for cigarettes in her town. Every single person that lived in that neighborhood raped her, threw money at her. She dropped out of school. No one gave a shit. People saw her grandfather beat the shit out of her. No one helped her. And then finally she found this girlfriend who fucking turned on her in court, testified against her, taped her confession, and then sold her rights to the movies. The lawyers that worked for her made money off her case. Like, she didn't have a fucking person in the world. I don't know. I just, I think she should have been able to get life.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't disagree. I think she was in Florida.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a killy state. Kind of a bunch of weirdos down there. They're pretty heavy on the death penalty. You know what? You might be mad at me. I'm pretty big on the death penalty.
I think if
you're proven to do it wrong.
If there's DNA.
Just end it. Because then the amount of money that we spend.
It's opposite. And you know that. It costs more money to execute people.
In one day than keep somebody alive?
To keep them in jail. Yeah. I don't know if it's because of the appeals and the court and all the processes and like death row, but like it costs more to execute somebody.
I've heard exactly the opposite.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that people on death row
are the most expensive inmates we can have.
I just feel it's like dealing with the symptoms and not the cause, and it's not a deterrent to crime at all.
Yes,
and
so
it's
like spending
all that money instead and like helping children, because most killers. Some are just terrible. Psychopaths.
A lot of them were molested as children. And
like Richard Ramirez, it's like, why? Of course he's going to fucking be a psychopath. His dad nailed him to a cross in the middle of the night in the cemetery. So I think it's like putting more money there. But like also just the race, the class, and all of those issues in our country. It's like how many people were falsely accused and then are going to be murdered when they didn't commit it. And what does it say about our society when we do the most heinous act that we're trying to punish? It's like fucked. I don't know. But of course, sometimes you read about these cases and you're like, murder that person. But it's like, I just am kind of against it.
No, I totally understand your point of view. And I'm a very liberal person too. Yeah. But I'm just at the same time, like all the thing of like the people that were raised. I mean, a lot of people didn't end up that way.
Yeah.
But I would say what our biggest thing right now in our country that we need is some sort of like, not insane asylums, but something to help people that are severely mentally abused and crazy people that we have these homeless people on the street. We need to have a place that they go, not the old one flew over cuckoo's nest where we're shocking people, but a place that helps people that are crazy. Because most of the people that are homeless and most of the people that have these severe damages in their lives, or you look at people who are left as kids to go into the orphanages and grow up that way, they're people that have been hurt so much, and we need to do something to help fix that.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But I, you know, yeah, I don't think I would have said Eileen. I don't know who I would have said, like, Ed Gein. I used to have a joke about him. Like,
Ed Gein's kind of funny.
I did like the creativity of what he did with the skin, if we want to go in a more silly way.
Yeah.
I think making, like, furniture and lamps and belts and stuff out of skin.
He's like Hobby Lobby a lot. Yeah. Showing it up. Yeah.
Like, I guess if I had to pick one. And he inspired so many movies, like Texas Chainsaw and Psycho, and that's kind of, so I would give it to him.
My silly one would be Dahmer. He's so diverse. You know, loved, who's going after Filipino men and, like, young black children? Like, no one doing that. Cream City Killer.
Because he knew what was up. That's the thing. It's like, are those guys smarter than these killer? It's just the human brain.
Well, I don't want to get in this one, but I always find it's a big race thing when people find a gangster who's killed like 15 people, but they don't say he's a serial killer. But when a white guy kills 15 people, he's a serial killer.
Well, go bouncing off that, I saw this online where it's always like black on black crime. And they're like, excuse me, you guys make full documentaries on white crime. You love it. We fucking love white killers. It is. Yeah, why don't we call fucking gangsters serial killers?
My least favorite is fucking, who's the chick with the baby that her husband dumped her in the lake?
Scott Peterson?
Scott Peterson. There's like six fucking things about him. Like six documentaries about him. And it's like, this kind of shit happens all the time. Why are we focused on this one guy doing this one thing? My girlfriend loved, when I say love Scott Peterson, not like actually likes him, but just wants to watch everything about him. Yeah. And it's just like, I just feel like there's.
It's also the fear. Like for me, it's just like, you don't know who you're married to, who you're dating. Like you just never fucking know. One fight and suddenly you're in a wood chipper and you didn't know that you married a fucking psycho.
Dude, who we've been listening to? Guys wanting to kill their business partners for nothing.
For nothing.
They spent $150,000.
But at least they think it's for something. It's kind of the Steve Buscemi and Con Air moment where it's like the true greats are killing for passion and not for reason or whatever. Like, but I don't know.
All right, let's keep going. The habeas appeal. So this is all about the this is going to get good.
Okay.
The, it's getting to the end, too. This is all about the case that he just failed.
Oh, we're sorry.
1996, the government passes the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. This bill meant that anyone who had committed an act of terrorism had 1 year to file a habeas petition from that date of the bill passing. Since Charles Harrelson was accused of killing a federal judge, his crime classified as an act of domestic terrorism. Habeas corpus is when a person who has been convicted of a crime can bring their case to the court if they feel they've been unlawfully imprisoned.
Habeas corpus, I only think of Legally Blonde.
Yeah.
There's like a scene about it. You barely remember.
Oh, no, it's more of like a girl our age kind of thing that they loved. I wasn't watching like Legally Blonde before I was sleeping at night.
Hey, that's all I think about with habeas corpus.
Oh, wait, is this the one? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going to get good here.
This is
okay. All right. 1997, Woody Harrelson meets attorney David Michael when David represented Woody and a group of 17 environmental activists arrested for protesting the decimation of the Redwood Forest. Get it, Woody? While the two were sharing a joint in a hot tub, hell yeah, Woody explained his father's case to attorney David Michael and later retained him for the habeas petition. There was a six-month time limit for them to file the petition because the AEDPA bill passed that year prior. So he got in there. Wow, what a good son. Still going to help his obviously psychotic father. Your parents get sentenced for two life sentences for a crime that they probably did. Are you helping them or letting them go? How far do you go to help them get out or cut ties?
I just can't imagine them doing anything like that, but I would help them.
So if your son did it, you would still help him, even though you knew?
This is a fucking parents.
Yeah, but if like they were actually psychos, like it was kind of like, obviously, Charles Harrelson is a fucking bad person. He's still doing everything he can to help your dad out.
If he did all of the, so just my dad, I just can't remove myself from like the situation. No, I mean, if my family was murdering for small amounts of money, no matter who, and maybe killed JFK, maybe I'd let them stay in jail. I mean, you led me to that answer.
Yeah, well, true. I put pressure on you.
Moves.
I put pressure on you, and I had the lights go on your head.
I don't want to, though.
The hardest part is believing that they really did the shit.
Yeah. And my dad, I think I'd be easier to let go than my mom.
One of your parents, you're like, I could see him killing you. You're like, I don't know. She wouldn't have done that. Someone else could have done it.
Who knows? Who knows what my dad has done? Like, they don't, I don't know. They had a whole different life. I mean, yeah. My mom, I wasn't born until my dad was 50.
They still alive?
Yeah. My dad will turn 84 in January.
Oh, we're almost the same age. All right, David Michael saw three glaring flaws in the first trial, the type of flaws that could lead to Charles winning a habeas petition and earning another child. Number one, the defense attorney that was assigned to defend Charles was named Thomas Sharp, and he spent $7,000 on his defense. He hired no experts, he hired no investigators, nothing, and he was blown out of the water. The government spent $23 million investigating the Judge Wood case. What are they doing? Fucking gold?
Wait, why? Why?
To get this guy in trouble. The government did it. I don't know.
But what? Because he killed JFK and they needed him in jail to shut up?
Well, they're not saying.
Why would you spend $23 million on some judge in Texas?
Well, let's go over real quick because I didn't finish the sentence, but you did fantastic. The government spent $23 million investigating the Judge Wood case, second in total spending to only the JFK assassination.
Yeah, okay. This is nuts.
Chris Lambros, the hypnotized witness, should have never been allowed to testify, obviously. Number three, there was a crucial witness named Robert Rojas that was never called to testify. Rojas was a convicted murderer who testified that the men that tried to kill Judge Kerr are the same ones that killed Judge Wood. His statements were thrown out of the case when a year had passed and the FBI had nothing to do with it. A, Rojas was down to the habeas hearing even though he was in witness protection, but he was too afraid to go in the courtroom because he thought he was going to be assassinated. Harrelson was also tried in the... Oh. Okay, so his retrial right now. Harrelson was also tried in the John Wood Courthouse, the guy who was killed. A courthouse named about him.
Wow.
Named after the late judge. And the case was presided over Judge Sessions. Sessions was an extremely good friend of Judge Wood and was even a pallbearer at his funeral.
Recuse yourself. You got to recuse yourself.
Yeah, or you're trying to get this guy in fucking trial.
So the FBI wanted to shut this guy up because he kept screaming that he shot JFK because he fucking did. So Woody Harrelson's dad killed JFK.
And we're going to get even. We're coming to the end now.
Is this
now.
A conspiracy theory? Is that what this is?
This is one of them, but I think it's one of the better ones.
Wow.
I mean, talk about a deck stacked against you. The name of the courthouse is the same as the dead judge, and the current judge was a pallbearer. What was one time you stuck by a friend through thick and thin?
I think my friends have stuck through me through thick and thin, I would say. I feel very grateful to have friends who are patient while I figure out my personality, you know? That's nice.
But I feel like once you get in your 30s, you figure out who we are more as people.
For sure. But like even on Friday, we were in the car and the music was on and I was turning it down and they were talking to me and I was just like, the music is too loud. Like I just was annoying. And then I was like, I'm sorry, that was annoying. And then it was over and gone. But you're right. If this was 10 years ago, it would have been like this annoying bitch with her flaws. But
then you don't apologize. You just get out of the car and say, fuck it, because it wasn't your fault.
Yeah, I ignore people. Like, I think I'm the pro. I think I'm lucky that I have friends that have stayed by me, I would say.
It's probably because you have glaring flaws, but the benefits outweigh the flaws.
I'm a good friend, but I definitely, and we'll all get better with times. What about you? You know what? Remember my friend with the cult and stuff? So she did this weekend seminar, and then I was at my sister's house, and she called me, and she was crying, and I was like, oh my God. So I went into my nephew's room. I was like, what's up? And she goes, you know that communication seminar I went to? I was like, sure. And she goes, well, I have some things to confess to you.
Oh, well,
And she said, I just need you to know that I never thought that you deserved to be happy. I have been sabotaging your relationship. I am not happy for you when you succeed. I've been waiting for your relationship to fail. And those are the only things I remember because it was like 12 years ago. But she legit called and was like, I've been rooting against you.
Like, maybe keep that to yourself.
And I said, you're my friend. I'll forgive you and we'll work through this. So
did
I
you
was.
Work through it?
No, it's the friend that, like, I lost to Landmark, and it just, like, didn't work out because the cult fucked her. But also, I was friends with a person from seventh grade on who just confessed to me that she never wanted me to be happy or succeed and had been rooting against me and trying to, like, ruin my relationship. And I gave it a few more years.
Dark and terrible. Yeah.
I gave it a few more years. But that's what's twisted. And those are the friendships that I still, like, not anymore, that I gravitate to, because that was my example of, like, young friendship, you know?
Did you feel it going up, that this kind of maybe side thing, or you just never knew?
Should put me down. Yeah, I just didn't think, because I just recently had, like, a big talk with a friend of, like, a long time, and I had to tell her, I'm like, I don't know what it is inside myself that was so flawed that I accepted this friendship of someone who can't be happy for me, but I can't do that anymore. And I'm not saying I'm good and you're bad, but, like, if something good happens and I can't call you right away, I just don't know if that's a close friendship that I'd like to continue. So it's my own whatever I thought about myself, but, like, I was okay with it.
My whole thing with it might make me a bad person. But every relationship I have is, I kind of just expect, if I give 100%, I expect 80 back. You don't got to do everything I would do for you, but you got to do some of it back. And when I don't get anything back, it's a little grossly transactional. But that's how I feel about a lot of my relationships.
But it also doesn't have to be, like, Caitlin Gill has a funny joke where she was, like, mad that her girlfriend wasn't, like, washing dishes or something. And then the girlfriend was like, when's the last time you changed the kitty litter? And it was the end of the argument where it's like you also have to see it. Yes. It's not always 50-50, but you have to see, like, the different things and appreciate what they're doing, even if it's not tit for tat with what you're doing.
100%. I just want something back in the relationship. I don't want to be giving
it. But I had a lot. Like, my recent friendship that ended that's been really sad was someone that just, like, visibly could not be happy for me. And I just couldn't do it anymore.
Okay, let's get the end here.
Let's get to the murder.
Okay, we're coming. We got about two pages left, and these are this one that I'm about to get to
But Woody, good son.
Woody's getting in there, and this is really interesting.
But the fact that Woody is so cool and beloved, and this was his childhood.
I don't want to see what happened to his siblings. Did they get so fucking weird since he was so famous?
You don't know?
I didn't look it up. Where it went wrong. Judge Fred Berry was assigned to the habeas case, which took place in Denver. Supermax is there, and the U.S. government said that they were unwilling to transfer Harrelson to Texas. This meant that both sides of the case, both prosecution and defense, had to fly in from all over the country, and both of them stayed in the same hotel right next to the courthouse.
Ooh,
that's very important.
That's not good.
The hearing took place over 4.5 days, and everything went smoothly for David, Michael, and Charles Harrelson. The witnesses and the examinations were perfect, and they show all the deficiencies in the first trial. Thomas Sharp, the attorney assigned to Charles Harrelson in the first case, is called to the stand as he is unable to defend himself. He seems like a fucking moron. It seems clear that the trajectory was pointed towards Charles winning the petition and earning himself another trial. Huge thing. And this is where it gets interesting.
I mean, you've said that like 8 times. This is really just a great case.
Across the street from the hotel that everyone was staying at was a 3-story gym. After the final days of the trial, David Michael, Woody Harrelson, and Brett Harrelson go to the gym. David and Brett go to the woods, weights, and Woody heads to the basketball courts. He had just finished filming White Men Can't Jump. Everyone meets back at the hotel room afterwards, and Woody tells an unbelievable story. The basketball court was empty. Woody was just shooting around by himself when all of a sudden the door is empty and Judge Fred Berry walks in, the judge of his dad's case. Judge Berry was a basketball coach back home. The two stared at each other, Woody seeing the judge that was presiding over his father's life, and Judge Berry seeing the man whose father he was either going to award a retrial or send him back to jail until he died. What did they do? They fucking played basketball. One-on-one, deuce-a-deuce, tit-for-tat, pitter-for-patter basketball until they finished. Woody said they never talked about the case, even though he was thinking about it, and they just played ball and went their separate ways. Judge Berry recuses himself from the trial. Keep in mind that at this point, Charles Harrelson was probably going to get another retrial. Everything seemed was going to go with him. Judge Berry recused himself from the case the next day. He felt that He was no longer unbiased and could not give a fair verdict. If he ruled that Charles Harrelson had the right to a new trial, it would be because he kind of bonded with Woody. And if he ruled against it, same thing, he didn't like Woody. The judge that got assigned to the case was was Judge Garcia, who seemingly had a preordained agenda to deny the habeas petition. He did end up denying it, and Charles Harrelson went back to Supermax, where he stayed until he died March 15th, 2007.
Wow.
Damn, so playing basketball in a way helped keep his dad in prison until he died. You ever have something small that ended up having a huge impact on your life?
Do you?
I think stopping to sell drugs made a huge impact on my life.
Yeah, I'll do that comedy thing. I was at Iowa State, and I was working at the call center. I was a Cyclone, and I got arrested twice and had to drop out and came to back home, and then was able to start comedy in Chicago a few years after that. And I guess I'm, like, so happy I didn't stay in Iowa. Like, I do want to have a sliding door. Like, I wish I could have a magic ball genie moment. I would just love to see what would happen to my life if I didn't drop out of Iowa State and I stayed working at the call center and, like, majored in advertising. I'm, like, would love to know what my life would be like.
Pregnant early or...
I never wanted to have children, though. Right. Yeah. But I don't know. Would I be in Iowa? Like, it's just so fucking weird.
All right, we're going to end it right here.
No.
This is JFK, Jack Ruby, and the CIA. So this is how Charles may have been the guy who shot JFK. Jimmy Chagra, the guy who hired Charles Harrelson to take out Judge Wood, was in prison until he was released in 2003 to live out his final days with his family.
Why did he get let out?
Sometimes when someone is about to die, they get let out if they're coming to the end of their shit, but maybe he was coming to the end otherwise.
Got it.
He had cancer, but in his dying months, he revealed a lot of things to his son, Jimmy Chagra Jr., that raised questions about Charles Harrelson. First and foremost of these, Jimmy Chagra Sr. claimed that he hired Charles because Charles shot JFK and that Charles had never pulled the trigger before then. That the other man was named Larry Culbreth. It sounded like a wild conspiracy, but after researching it extensively, there are more questions than answers. Charles told one of his former attorneys, Danny Sheehan, that in the early 60s, he was smuggling guns into Cuba with Jack Ruby under orders of the CIA. It sounds impossible until you consider Jerry O'Brien Walken's story and Percy Foreman, the attorney. So Jerry O'Brien's was the guy who went to Castro's like camps and learned all about that stuff. And Percy Foreman was the crazy attorney that... should have never represented Harrelson. Jerry Watkins, the man that drove the car during the Sam D'Elia murder, claimed to have only met Charles a few months before the hit. As it turns out, Jerry just so happens to also be the guy that was smuggling guns into Cuba as a liaison for the CIA. Suspicious. Percy Foreman, the attorney that twice represented Charles, was said to be one of the most expensive attorneys in the country. How Charles was able to afford him is quite a mystery. The man had nothing going on. He was a fucking hitman, low end. But it again seems almost too convenient that Percy Foreman was also the lead attorney in Jack Ruby's trial, another guy that was involved in the assassination of JFK. The day that Charles had mainland cocaine and driven out in the middle of nowhere, he said that he had killed JFK along with the judge. He said he was on the grassy knoll that day and he killed JFK. When he was arrested and taken to jail that night, the attorney that Joe Chagra sent said that Charles told him to go get an ounce of cocaine and also that he killed JFK. That part's not as good.
Well, because the thing is, it's like if you're constantly, like, I bet lots of people say that they killed JFK. The FBI doesn't care.
And they have an ounce of cocaine. Yeah.
So, I mean, you've like fully convinced me.
Charles said he wanted an attorney to trust him. Word for word, he said, "You think they'd cut me some slack in the Judge Wood murder case if I could clear up the JFK assassination and what happened because I was involved." Again, it sounds like the farcical ramblings of a man too high to know what's going on. And the attorney that night didn't believe him until he saw the film JFK in 1991. In said film, they talk about a three well-dressed hobos the cops found behind the railway depot near the grassy knoll, and they show a picture. The attorney said a chill went down his spine because one of the hobos was Charles Harrelson, no doubt in his mind. These men have become known as the Three Tramps. They were arrested in Dallas the day that Kennedy was shot, but they were later released with no fingerprints taken and no records of their fucking arrests.
So do you think the FBI found them on purpose? Like they found some low rent?
I think I think Dallas PD found them. FBI came in and said, "Let these guys go. They're just hobos." Blah blah blah. Just let them do the thing.
No, I'm saying to get chosen to commit this crime.
I think they kind of know, just like the guy who was like one of their top 10 most wanted, and they had him hook up with the other guy to get the other guy in trouble. I think they got fingers in their pies. I think they know how to. They're always going for the biggest fish possible. I think this is what they did. All that exists are now are photos. A forensic pathologist once examined the pictures and, to her expertise, said that there was a 96% chance that it was Charles in the photographs. These are the photos. We can click them if you want a little time. So it'd be one of the guys in the back here.
Whoa. And then they don't look like hobos.
No, they don't. They look like guys dressed up as hobos. Right? They look good. Also, like, don't you love that hobos in the 60s wore suit jackets? And then one more was here. But of these pictures, if you knew who these guys were, if it was Steve Fury, you'd know it was Steve Fury.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what a forensic pathologist said it was Charles Harrelson. According to the FBI, the three men have been identified and the conspiracy lives on nonetheless. The last strange bit of information comes from the interview between Woody Harrelson and Barbara Walters, where he says that his father was trained by the CIA, but that he shouldn't reveal anything else. The interview is here. We're not going to do that. Much about Charles Harrelson's life will remain a mystery through time, but there are some facts. He was a gambler, a smooth-talk card shark that would rob you blind and then give you his business card. He was cold, calculated, loved to read. He was charming and intimidating. He was in some way associated with the mob, with the CIA, and with the assassination of a federal judge, and just maybe, killed JFK. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Wow. I just can't believe that's Woody Harrelson's life.
Woody fucking Harrelson's dad. One of my favorite actors. Dad is a psychopathic murderer. If not, he killed JFK. Everything else, he's a weirdo.
Damn.
Tell everybody about your podcast. It's fantastic.
Amazing tale. I have a podcast called That's Messed Up, an SVU podcast, where my co-host Kara Klink and I talk about an episode of SVU, the true crime it's based on. And then we interview a guest from the episode. And we get some high-class guests.
Yeah, you're
Lou
on the...
Lou Diamond Phillips. Hello. You know, that was exciting. Yeah, Marsha Gay Harden. She has an Oscar. Wyclef Jean. Like, people come on.
No, you're on the...
Exactly
Karen
right.
Karen Kilgraff area. Yeah, the
My Favorite Murder My Favorite Network. Murder stuff. Yeah. And we have a lot of murder girls. And when I do stand up now, I can see who the murder girls are.
I'm so...
Like, I got heckled in San Francisco with my co-host's daughter's name. Like, I started doing a joke about children and people started going, "Rosie!" Like, it's they're really fun murder girls.
It's great. And I'm happy it's finding success. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it, buddy. Bye. See you, Tony. Thanks, Tony.